It's time to ramble. It's time for the Royal Ramble. Participants include Stephen Graham, Johnny P, and J.R. Goldberg, plus the 1995 Rumble. Turn on the WWE Network because it's time for the Ramble. So, Johnny, thanks for joining us. How you doing?
I'm okay. Listen, you sounded just like the Fink when you opened up the show, and I appreciate it because yes. It brought me back to my childhood.
Yes,
I'm practicing. It's my second attempt. That was the pilot. I think I did a little worse, but this is season one, episode one. So I've stepped up my game.
Nice.
And JR, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Yeah, I'm ready to watch this Royal Rumble. We got Shawn Michaels coming out right now.
Watch this Royal Rumble and also continue a Twitter discussion we had the other night.
Yeah, it was a good one. As good and as nuanced a conversation can get on Twitter.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to bring it to the real words that you can expand upon them. But from what I understand, our good friend Tanner posted something like he's got 8 5-star matches already this year, and anyone who has 5-star fear is a pansy. Along those lines. It wasn't his exact phrasing. And my response was, I don't have 5-star fear. I just have a desire to keep 5 stars special. And that set Johnny off a little bit. So
that brought me and JR out of the woodwork, apparently. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. We came together. I mean, I guess I'm more in line with Steven on this discussion. First of all, let's ignore. I mean, we could go down the rabbit hole in terms of star ratings and how I think they're preposterous and sort of damaging in the long term. I understand why they're there, and I understand the point of them, but I think we use them really poorly as a whole, and lots of things. Like, I mean, realistically, and I don't get too many arguments when I say this, but wrestling fans have created a 5-star scale where only like 3 through 5 is ever used. You know,
it's true.
Yep. And occasionally one when someone wants to make a point, so like what we really have is a 3-star scale where 3 stars, which should be middling, really means like bad. You shouldn't go out of your way to see this. And 4 stars means like, oh, this is pretty good. Some people may enjoy this. And then 5 stars is like, oh, I think everyone will enjoy this. But yeah, I mean, I'm more along the lines of Steven. I mean, I don't feel as though I have 5-star fear, but I guess I feel that I have like a more rigorous scale than some people because, I remember tweeting that, I think somebody in the VOW Slack, I forget who, over the course of the G1, had rated like more than 40 matches at above 4 stars, and I don't.
One of them had
decade.
One of them had a guy have 3 nights straight of having 3-star matches or 5-star matches.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. Right. And like I'm glad that's the connection that you had to what you were watching. Like I want to stress wholeheartedly that. I will never criticize someone for enjoying wrestling, you know, like that's not what I'm about. Like everyone should enjoy wrestling as much as they humanly can. But like, to me, it's funny just cause like, I don't think in the past decade I've enjoyed all of wrestling as much as some people have enjoyed just the matches in the G1 tournament of 2017. And I don't know what that says about me. Maybe I just don't like wrestling.
Maybe
I've devoted all this time to something that I actually hate very much.
I've wondered the same thing in trying to do it like as unbiased as you can be, like a self-analysis where you just go like, am I missing something?
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and like,
I'm realizing this. Go ahead.
I no, sorry, John, but like I'll say this last thing and then I'll be quiet for a minute. I do want to stress as well that I'm talking purely in the hypothetical. I've watched none of the G1 right now. I will watch, I would say, 10 matches from it towards the end of the year when I'm putting together a match of the year ballot.
Oh, because, I will not. And I will tell you why. Because
I'm a completionist, like, well, not a completionist, I guess, but I feel like if I'm going to tell people to, like, watch, like, matches from, like, IWRG or whatever, then I should have watched matches that are heavily pimped by everybody, simply so I can tell you why I think this match with Parada Morgan Jr. is better than all the Kenny Omega matches combined.
See, you know? I've always, like, thought that, and I've always, every year, I've tried to watch the best matches from everywhere that's pimped. However, my frustration's boiled over because these people who are promoting, you know, New Japan, PWG, all this stuff, they're not watching Lucha. They're not watching it at
they certainly
all.
Are not.
So if their ballots are valid by just watching one or two promotions that they like, then my ballot is just as valid when it's just Lucha and Stardom and WWE.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I agree 100%. I mean, realistically, no one's ballot is any more or less valid because all of this is stupid, right? Like, you know, it's entirely nonsensical. But that's damaging to the overall conversation, right? Like, you know, I mean, I see where you're coming from, and I agree. I guess I just like to, you know, I'm on Pro Wrestling Only, you know, and I did this throughout the GWE project, and I like to think that I hold myself to the standard of showing my work and finding comparison points, because that's the only way that I can fairly, you know, make other people try and hold that standard as well, you know?
No, fair. So, Johnny.
Yeah, John, counterpoint, please.
I think, first of all, it's funny you say that, because I was thinking even before you started saying these things, I'm like, man, we really kind of stacked the deck, although we will get a little bit more contentious as we get into, like, the nuances. Because I'm a show your work guy, too.
Of course.
Certainly, like, we've got the whole, like, hey, Jay, you know, full disclosure, like, JR and I have sat and talked at length through entire shows where we're, like, passively watching the matches and commenting on them, but also, like, talking, like, wrestling theory and whatnot. And,
yes.
We're all very similar in that, like, we all think we should not only show our work, but, like, I've just in the last year kind of – I'm so glad we're doing this, because I've just in the last year kind of, like, cleansed myself of doing what we're talking about, which is being, like, I need to watch everything so I'm informed. And, you know, I kind of grew up through the newsletter thing, too, and the whole cult of Meltzer that I'm sure we'll get into. There's so many, like, different, like, nooks and crannies you can go into with these kind of things. I think – and by the way, JR, where we will get contentious is probably – not contentious, but, like, where we might diverge is, like, the Lucha thing.
Sure.
But, okay, so first of all, I'm really glad to be on this because I was just jotting down trying to figure out in the last 5 minutes, okay, like, well, what are the points here that would be, like, smart to talk about? And the first thing I wrote down was age. And I do see an influx of a lot of new life that on the positive has, like, breathed more life into online communities and, like, gotten more discussion. It's the last 2 years where, like, anybody who's talked to me privately, I'm like, wow, it's like I just woke up one day and, like, everything switched on me. And it's, like, fascinating. And you can see how you kind of lose history and you lose this, like, reverence to things because new people want to create their own thing. And I was like that, too, when I was younger.
Yeah.
And I still want
to say, sorry, John, not to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
We can come back to this after I make this point because I'm going to forget it otherwise. But
sure.
I think that something that should be discussed and that isn't often is that you could probably make a case, and I would make this case, that the biggest divide in wrestling fandom right now is tied up into age, but it's also tied up into people that became part of this fandom when they had to search and seek out wrestling aside from what was on American television. and people that came up into this fandom when things were significantly more readily available.
Yeah.
But anyway, continue.
Yeah. Okay. I wrote that down. That's definitely part. That's a huge part of it too, because that's part of the age thing too. Because I'm only 36, and at 33, I would have said there's really no difference. And I still do, for the most part, get along with like the younger fans.
Yes.
But there's become this like real divide, and it makes you sound like a Grinch. And it really sucks to be on Twitter and make these points. I had like a freak out. Where I tried to watch an ROH pay-per-view in December. I may have even talked to JR about this when it was going on. Because, like,
well, there's mistake, right?
I lost my effing head. Well, because I was at the very first ROH show. I was an ROH guy deep for the first 6.5, 7 years. I even tried to hang on post-Sapolsky for, like, almost a year. I didn't quite make it. But, yeah, I was just like, I will always see the Young Bucks as, like, that's great that they're smart businessmen, and I don't think they're bad dudes at all. I've heard them talk. But they're just always going to be, like, my reaction to them is, like, oh, we're just letting backyarders in these days? We're just, like, all the stuff that was on crazy tapes. And, like, listen, people, if you're younger, and I sound like an old man, like, okay. The things that they do are just a little more athletic versions of, like, these VHS tapes I would get of people, like, they would sell these things on like infomercials of like guys doing backyard stuff. And it's basically like a more refined version of that. And it was fun at the time because I was in ECW, but like my taste changed and I got older and I started looking at these things even more analytically. And that's another thing I want to talk about too, is like the club that you kind of want to be in. And I think age and when you get into these things affects that too. Like when we want to get in, or when we do get in, and what we value becomes a big part of, like, it helps to shape and mold us. It's like a cultural thing within the larger culture.
Yeah.
I don't know if either of you can speak to that. I definitely know that it was important to me to be informed about the history. It was important to me to, like, watch, because I don't love every old match just because, like, somebody said it was. And I didn't watch Flair Steamboat Live. I was 9, I think. Or no, I was younger. I was 8. But yeah. I really do love those matches in there, and I can tell you why I love those matches. I think the best jumping off point for me, and then I'll throw it to you guys again, is I happened to watch the G1 finals last night. I tweeted about it with my 11-year-old nephew, who's a passive fan. It's more like he loves me to death and I'm a fan, and he'll come and we'll just watch some YouTube stuff, and then like I'll be like, oh, check this out. Like he likes Matt Riddle because his dad does Matt's gear. So like he knows who Matt is. He has like a personal connection thing.
Cool.
So we'll show him like Matt stuff and everything. And I showed him Shibata before the whole thing happened. And I was like, wait, you know, you really don't want to do, because he said, is this like, he doesn't use the term shoot, but he was like, is this actual fighting? And I was like, no, it's still scripted. And then he's like, well, this guy's really trying to hurt this guy. I'm like, yeah, like that's kind of like, sometimes it's an agreement thing. Sometimes it's a vet versus younger guy thing. But really there's certain aspects of him. I remember having this whole conversation with the kid going like, I really like Shibata, but he's prone to doing like, he has to get his stuff in. And some of his stuff is just like way over the top, unnecessary, because he could just work it better. Right. And then not 3 months later, he asked me about Shibata again. And I'm like, oh yeah, that guy might not ever wrestle again. He's like, why? And I'm like, oh, he actually headbutted a guy and he's got all kinds of problems now. So that was very informative to me. And then I like watched this match with him last night, and we both really liked it at first. Everything was, there was some psychology to it. It was smart. Everything was just done with a lot of efficiency and effort. I'm a big fan of urgency, and that was there. Yeah. And then they just started doing lots of stuff. And then like a guy at some point, he goes, that should kill that guy, meaning like Omega just destroyed Naito.
Yeah.
And Naito is just like, now it's my turn. I'm hulking up, sort of. But it wasn't even like hulking up. He's just like, I go. And my nephew goes like, I'm done with this. An 11-year-old is just like, he goes, it's so, and this is a kid who plays video games all day. And he's just like, well, I don't like, at some point, like they're just doing stuff and it's like nothing hurts. And I'm like, oh my God, this 11-year-old, he gets it.
You know? Right.
It's not my stance on it. And that's basically where I come from. Like, I want to like a lot of this stuff. I think that Kenny Omega is super talented. He's like the better version of a Davey Richards in a lot of ways.
Right.
For older fans like me, or like, you know, maybe if you want to think of me as shaking my finger as if I'm some cliche. And yet he just goes to these tropes of things, and like the character stuff is that it's very LOL wrestling. And I think a big part too, JR, is that we got into it when it was simulated sport too, or at least that idea, that was part of the narrative of it. And now it's like, you hear it all the time from this monolithic company, which is another thing, people getting in after the everything kind of merged together and then the indies and technology came out, is this idea that, well, you should like these ridiculous things because they're amazing athletic feats and it's all entertainment. As if entertainment is this thing that you can't not like.
Certainly, I think that, and this is maybe a different argument, but certainly I feel like when we were kids, and we're all about the same age, you know, John, you said you're 36, I'm 33.
I'm 36, too.
Yeah. Certainly when we were kids, there was an idea, even if you knew it was fake, this is interesting, because I never really thought about it in these terms, but, like, I feel like when I was a kid, I knew it was fake and predetermined, but I still took it at face value that the guys who won more made more money.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right? And
well, that was part of the narrative.
Not only more money, but they were better.
Right. Yeah, mm-hmm. They were better. Right. Yes. But, you know, now I feel like it's almost purely performance art, where the people who are most well regarded are the people who are best at simulated fighting, rather than the people who win the most often, or you know, maybe it's a chicken and egg issue that the people who win the most often are the people that are not best at winning but the best at simulated fighting. That's an interesting point as well, and I think it does come down to age. I also think, like, you know, and John sort of hit the nail on the head in terms of, and, you know, we can take this into a more iffy corner, I guess, in that, like, certainly I feel like with the younger generation and their attempts to, find things that resonate with them and create their own narratives, that there's Mabel and King Kong Bundy is my shit right here right now, by the way. They're going at it. I think there is a sort of a gatekeeping aspect to it, you know, that everyone wants to create their own little section of the clubhouse, you know? And I'd like to say that, you know, at least in my personal fandom, like, I don't feel that way about wrestling. There's always a chance that maybe I don't feel that way because I'm already, like, an accepted part of the fandom, you know? Like, but, I mean, we all three of us, right, you know, on some way cut our teeth on the Death Valley Driver video review.
Yeah.
And I think for all of its faults, and they are myriad, it's not a perfect website and it was never a perfect thing. Like, that place above any other place I've ever been, was, in terms of being in a fandom, was open to the idea of, like, if you like this person that is, agreed upon by the canon of wrestling as terrible, then you like them. And I'm sure there's a reason why you like them. That reason, for most people on DVDVR, was good punches, right? And that became the joke. But, like, you know, I think that that's something that all three of us have in common, that, like, we came up in a really formative part of our fandom was this this place where it was like, yeah, you know, you can like anything, you know? Like, oh, who cares that Meng doesn't do flips? Like, Meng's awesome, you know? So I think that's part of it for us, where maybe we tear our hair out a little bit because, you know, that became like a big part of who I am as a fan. But to come to the conclusion after so many years that it was such a niche thing, and that other people never got out of the bubble of like, oh, well, like only All Japan is good, because the one person who I've read wrestling reviews from told me that All Japan in the mid 90s was really good. And it was, but there's more to it than that.
Can we get into the gatekeeper thing?
Yeah, sure.
Do you want to take it in that direction?
That's fine. Because Steven, I feel like you've been quiet. Do you want to add anything?
I'm just enjoying the conversation, and I'm watching Mantar.
Yeah, confrontation.
And, oh, Mantar. Mantar's in the ring.
He's going to be our favorite. I mean, Mantar, you know.
But I'll jump in. I want to hear this gatekeeper talk.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like, I think that, like, it's something that gets thrown around a lot right now, you know, and I think that it's important, you know, especially as, like, you know, visible people on Twitter, you know, and in, you know, the sort of wrestling bubble on Twitter, like, it, you know, inclusivity is a conversation that's been had a lot. And, you know, I think more often than not, it's meant in regards to like, you know, feeling comfortable at shows and things like that. And that's, I mean, of the utmost importance, like, because wrestling fans are creeps and shouldn't be creeps ever. But I do think that it's often overlooked that, like, there can be a gatekeeping aspect of wrestling fandom in terms of, like, thought as well. And you see it a lot with you know, people who tweet, like, you know, I follow a couple, you know, people who tweet about, you know, who are girls or women, and they like Roman Reigns. And Roman Reigns is an awesome wrestler, but, like, because they're visible women in a fandom that is mostly gross men, and they like Roman Reigns, like, they get a lot of shit thrown their way, you know? Mm-hmm. And these guys are inevitably like, oh, you should watch ROH. That's, like, the real good wrestling or whatever, you know? So I feel like there is this, like, this thought gatekeeping that goes on in terms of, like, if you don't like this specific aspect of wrestling, then you're not a true fan. And I do think that's what this sort of, like, this power creep amongst star giving can be attributed to in some way as well, of, like, I'm not saying that people who are giving 5 stars to you know, Omega matches and Naito matches because they want to feel like they're in the in crowd, but I do feel like there's a divide and people want to be included in a fandom because it feels good to be included, you know, and giving something overt praise is an easy way to be included in a fandom that is sort of divided.
Yeah. With something I find weird about this whole thing. So I have some friends I went to high school with that we used to watch wrestling a lot, and we'll still do Facebook chats, and, like, we met up at Survivor Series last year in Toronto and stuff like that. And they don't read Meltzer. They aren't on PWO. They aren't on Voices of Wrestling. They're not that type of fan.
Yeah.
But one of them has New Japan World and thinks that's the best wrestling in the world. And watches some Ring of Honor and WWE, you know, it's Kevin Owens and AJ Styles are the best, and Cena and Roman Reigns suck. they have those opinions too.
Yeah.
And I don't know where, like, they're not coming from the sources that you think they're coming from. I don't know where they're coming from.
Yes. That's really interesting, you know, that some of these opinions are sort of just, like, via osmosis, you know?
Yeah. So. But.
Yeah, no, that is interesting. I mean, I should state to anyone who's listening, I think that one of the things that I often do, and I think we all do it to some extent if we're on Twitter or on a message board, is, like, significantly overestimate the importance and the, like, the how far spread the opinions that we get in our little bubble are, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure that, like, the vast majority of arguments that we get into on Twitter regarding professional wrestling are, we're, like, the, like, 0.1% of people that, like, actively care about, like, whether Roosh is a better wrestler than, you know, Bone Soldier. I don't know. I'm just naming somebody. Roosh is a better wrestler than Bone Soldier, by the way.
You don't think Bobby, 17-year-old Bobby at the local house show is participating in the GWE?
I do not think so. And I think that thank God for that. Not because it would make the GWE worse, but because Bobby has better things to do at 17 than participate in the GWE.
I remember...
I almost had, like, flashbacks today when I saw someone on Twitter post that, like, when we did the GWE, what, 2 years ago now? 2.5 years ago?
Yeah.
2016, man. That was last year.
Was it? I thought it was... It might be right. I was like, geez, time's moving quickly.
So, last year, Okada finished 137th, I think someone said. And then they were like, in the past year, like, how far has Okada risen into the top 100? And I'm like, Jesus, I hope to, like, 136. Like, come on, guys. Like, but I just...
Okay, so I have something off of that. I was going to get into, like, an even bigger macro thing of, as far as gatekeeping goes and how it's become circular and, like, other things have adjusted. But I do want to react to that one point, which is that I do feel... Like, it's not just wrestling fans, it's wrestlers themselves, who most of which grew up as fans, probably reading stuff that people like us put on the Valley Driver or something. Yeah. Just in general, there's no, I don't want to use the term quality control. Something can be quality while still being unnecessary within, like, a narrative structure of a match. But, like, in every facet of wrestling, from the wrestlers in in-match, to the promoters and promotions with gimmicks and things that they do and gimmick matches, to just the fans online, like, that comment to me is very much indicative of culture in general right now, and certainly within wrestling, where it's like, well, he had a good year, arguably. Well, let's just say he had a great year, okay? Because I don't hate any of these people, and I did like that. I like some of these Omega matches. I just don't think that they're 5 stars. And there are inherent problems in what they do.
Right.
And this is kind of speaking to my point anyway, which is that we have no patience within our culture or in the larger culture. It's like, oh, well, he had a good year. So obviously he went from 138 to, like, top 20, like, which is ignoring the fact that he's probably going to be wrestling another 20 years at least, you know,
right,
in some facet. I mean, Tenryu just retired, you know, these guys, if their legs aren't amputated, they're going to get in the ring and get paid to do it.
Speaking of which, Dick Murdoch just came down to the ring in the 1995 Royal Rumble.
Yeah. Man, there's something that, just in the last 10 years, think about this, guys. Like, I remember when the 80s set started coming out and being like, feeling like a wet behind the ears kid, even though I had been lurking for like a decade online. Yeah. It was like 06, 07, I got involved in this thing. And I'm thinking, wow, we're finally going to have all this stuff and we're going to have all these discussions because we're all coming together. And it's like, there are certain sets that I'm just like, oh, that's just not going to happen now because, like, people got older, life gets in the way. And also, like, the culture shifted to the point where people who would have made sets go, well, that's a lot of time and effort and money to put something together that, A, people don't want the DVDs. And B, like, it'll get pirated right away. And C, participation will probably lag because people are overwhelmed with free stuff they can get or pirated stuff that they can get.
Yes.
And that just speaks again to that point. It's like too much is never enough within our culture. It's insane that because there's nobody to tell somebody don't do 8 of these things. And they go like, well, the fans are cheering. And I'm like, yeah, but I mean, I lived through ECW and it gets to the point where it's like, well, does he have a gun and is he going to shoot the guy in the head?
Right.
Because otherwise there's no pop. The only thing that I think that doesn't stretch this further and that's interesting and does make me feel like an old curmudgeon is that we are definitely also in a this is awesome era. And that's part of what we're talking about with this 5-star, like, everything's 5 stars in the same way that everything is awesome. I was at SCI, and I jokingly to pop my friends who were all, you know, from our, you would know all their names if I said them.
Yes.
People started doing it. This is awesome, but it was very droning. It was just like, this is the part where he dives. I better say it's awesome. And after the second, I just yelled out, I go, that's disingenuous. You do not mean that.
I was at a CZW show the weekend of SCI, the Onita show. And people chanted Fight Forever in a match between Shane Strickland and Masada that was like the definition of mediocrity. Like, it was like one of like imagine a Masada title challenge. You know, like, you've seen Masada wrestle, you know, like, you've seen Shane Strickland wrestle. Like, imagine their match together. It was not out of, you know, there was nothing exemplary about it. And people, like, chanted Fight Forever. You know, so.
Because they want to be part of a moment. The fans want to be part of a moment. The guys want to do the same spot that got over on some NXT show because that really got over, even though it's not relevant to what. And there's certain spots that should only be done, like, once every 2.5 years. And somebody should, and I know we don't have a perfect system for this, but somebody in power, like, there's just no power center. It's because it's an art. So imagine, like, every artist trying to, like, outdo the other one for something.
Michael Bay.
Except people in art.
I think that's a really interesting point. And I think that, I mean, you know, I'm pretty outspoken in my opinions about, you know, Dave Meltzer, who is great at a few things and not so great at other things. But I think that Dave Meltzer has been a tastemaker for so long, and his stylistic preferences are so ever-present on what's considered good wrestling that it impacts the art form negatively. Because, like John was saying, like, it would... If we take this sort of wrestling as art metaphor, you know, if we say that every wrestler is an artist, right? It would be, like, wrestling is at a point where one painting gets sold, let's say, in the art world, you know, for $80 million. And wrestling, instead of wrestlers going and still doing what they are good at and what is, you know, what could make them stand out and what their skill set demands, they would rather imitate that painting. You know, and wrestling fans would rather them imitate that painting.
Well, it's easy to see how this happened. Like, Meltzer was the voice for so long, the 80s, the 90s.
And still is.
But a lot of
this is what I wanted to get into before anyway, so
And a lot of the wrestlers who are wrestling now were following Meltzer before they got into wrestling.
Yeah.
So that molded their taste. And now the way they wrestle is molded to a certain taste, and it keeps perpetuating itself.
Yeah, I know.
He's also got a family tree now. That's I was so thankful you brought this up, because I was hesitating before. There's also, I'll never forget watching a football game in the 90s, and they showed what's his name, Bill Walsh, who was a famous 49ers coach back in the 80s and early, I think the early 90s. And they showed this coaching tree. This is like 96, of like people who had worked with him, who had gone on to then be head coaches. And there was this whole thing at the time with the West Coast offense, and it like existed for years as like this in vogue stylistic idea of offensive football. And I think Meltzer's, like, inadvertently, because I'm with JR, like, I have a lot of problems with him, with Meltzer, but I don't hate Dave Meltzer. I was a Meltzerite at one point.
I don't think I want to be clear to people listening to this, you know, because I've been outspoken about Dave. I don't think that anything that Dave Meltzer does is insidious. And I think that Dave Meltzer genuinely and truly loves what he loves. Mm-hmm. And that's great, right? I just happen to love different things than Dave. So, of course, I'm going to have problems with it, you know?
I'm the same way, except that I would go further, and it kind of folds into this coaching tree thing. There have been a lot of – the internet opened up. I did a podcast like 2.5 years ago with Dylan Hales and on this very network, actually. It was Goodwill Wrestling with Goodwill Will and Dylan and myself, talking about how wrestling fandom has evolved and who were the gatekeepers and how it had opened up and how it had changed. I feel like in a weird way we've become circular, because while certain gatekeepers have gone away and just aged out or like, you know, just left the hobby because they weren't interested in the newer styles, Dave is still massively influential because all these young kids do read him, or they follow blogs or Twitter posts of people who are from that family tree, which goes back to the whole Bill Walsh analogy. Like, Voices of Wrestling, which JR works for, comes from the Dave Meltzer thing a lot. They will reference his stars, and they've actually been self-aware where they've gone like, yeah, we're only using this as a scale, and we need to get other scales and different things. There are other people who rate matches and things. That's not Dave Meltzer's fault. My issue is that when Dave addresses the criticisms, he addresses them sort of correctly, and he's saying, look, it's an opinion, it's just mine, you can have your own. But then the next moment, and I've heard him do this on his own podcast, he will talk about Tanahashi and Okada and say all these – he will make reference to, oh, they just had all these five-star matches. And he will never say it in the sense that, like, he's the man who said that.
Right.
It's not that nobody else is putting – like, we would not have this culture if Dave didn't first tell you for years that Tanahashi was the best wrestler in the world and that that series – was analogous to Steamboat and Flair. And it's not that it's bad, the matches or anything, or that he has that opinion. What my trouble with is that his fan base doesn't pick up on the nuances of this. And then he feels self-assured because other people who are fans of his or believe his opinion or like just have the same taste back it up. So he's in one breath, he's saying, you know, it's just my opinion, blah, blah, blah. But then he's talking about it in this circular, like, vacuum as if he's not the one who blessed them with this.
Right.
It becomes part of the narrative, even though he's the one who created the narrative, in my opinion.
And yeah.
That's kind of my issue with... So I feel like it's become circular, where there were gatekeepers, they got knocked down because the internet exploded everything and made everything open. But now we're falling back into this thing where certain people's opinions are gatekeeper-ish again. I guess that's just part of the cycle of anything.
Yeah, I agree. And, I think that for people who like different things, like Steven and I and you do, you know, like things that – by different things, I mean things outside of Meltzer's wheelhouse, I guess. I think we've all experienced the frustration in trying to disagree with Dave, where you get people – who, when you say, boy, people speak out of sort of both sides of their mouth because they'll say, it's just one guy's opinion. Don't put so much stock into it.
Yeah.
And then you say, okay. And then you say, well, I thought this match was 2.5 stars, right? And they say, what is wrong with you? Dave Meltzer gave that match 5 stars, right? And so I feel like we're at a point where we can't have it both ways. You know, I'm, you know, Dave is an informed opinion, you know, and he has a lot of knowledge. Granted, you know, Dave is famous for not going back and rewatching matches. So
I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah. You know, so to me, you know, people that say, you know, his knowledge, should means his opinion means more. You know, I think it only goes so far because if you're not actively looking back on things and you still remember them purely based on the moment you watched them, I don't think that it's as valid as people that consistently rewatch things, you know?
It also means that if your dog passed away that day and you just weren't into it,
right,
that it is forever a 2.5-star match. And that's, yeah.
Well, here's something that Dylan brought up on Twitter a little while ago. He pointed out that Shinsuke Nakamura, you know him, right?
Yeah.
He's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, he sure is.
Yeah.
How? Yeah. Like, what? Like,
I mean, the thing about Nakamura being in the Hall of Fame, because I would love to rail against that, but like,
and I love Nakamura. He's one of my favorite wrestlers ever.
Me too, but it's only been a few years of good stuff and a lot of wonky stuff.
So he wasn't even the worst person in that Hall of Fame class.
Oh, was it?
To get it. Because, I love Lucha, and I feel like I have to defend Lucha you know, all the time. But Pedro Aguayo Jr. got in that year, and like, he, in no uncertain terms, should be in the, in like any sort of Hall of Fame, especially before Mystico. But like, you know, I think that that speaks to something in terms of just like the, you know, the Juan Hall of Fame is very much based in just like the person of the now. Like if Pedro, Pero hadn't died, you know, he wouldn't have gotten in. Brock Lesnar got in that year, because that was the year that he won the UFC title, right? Or he had just come back or something, right? He just came back. And so like, that's, I, you know, I mean, I feel like Shinsuke is the third worst person that year to get in, you know?
Yeah. It's just mind, like, it's like the narrative is set and then it's like completely forgotten.
Yes.
Like a year later.
There's no sense of irony to it because there's no sense of history. I'm going to get a little controversial here by just saying, like, it very much mirrors what's going on in the United States right now, where there's, like, a lack of, I'll say it. Yeah, but a sloppiness, like just this idea that anything that happened 3 years, so much has happened that anything 3 years ago or more, it's just, there's no, people don't remember any kind of precedent, basically. There's no kind of governing, and that's part of like wrestling fandom. Again, we're talking about something that you can easily knock down by saying, well, it's a hobby, and on top of that, it's an opinion. But I do see it again, like those guys getting into the, I had no problem with the Juan Hall of Fame. I actually voted one of the years.
Yeah.
And then magically I didn't get a ballot the next year after I said some things, but everybody swears to me that it has nothing to do with what I said. So I'm not going to put that on the curator of it, but I just started to feel in the last 2 years, like, I don't even know that I would want to vote for it, even though I kind of grew up thinking it would be cool to do so, because it does feel like in the last few years, at least for me, and it's my perspective based on my age and where I got in, that just everybody gets in now. Everybody's awesome. Everybody gets in.
Yeah.
You know, I hate to sound like one of these people because I'm such a liberal guy of like yelling, everybody gets a trophy. But it does kind of feel like we've really kind of lowered standards, and we have no sense of why other people were great just because people are more athletic now. And I think that's good. I think some aspects of matches are better now. But I think that we've lost a lot of fundamental stuff that made me care. And that stuff is just so undervalued. And there's this ridiculous meme out there that if you like anything from the territories or the 90s even, it's this reductive argument with no person to fight it, like myself or JR, where, oh, well, you like headlocks in the opening match of an MSG show from 1980. And that's just nonsense.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you. I mean, I feel like, you know, wrestling has sped up, you know, although maybe I'm wrong, because certainly the mid-90s wrestling was real fast, you know, like Joshi and even the AJPW style was, you know, pretty over the top. But I feel like in recent years, wrestling has escalated.
I like Parv when they're doing the greatest WWE wrestler ever. And uh-huh. He says that anything from like the aughts or now, like,
here we go.
And no, what he's saying is you have to like treat 1 year of the 80s like 3 months or 4 months of the aughts. Like, that's like the equivalent.
Yeah.
Like, it's so sped up and so much more happening that you need like a conversion chart.
Yeah.
Oh, and one more thing that I want to throw out there, so I'll get us all in trouble. I'll be the one. It's my opinion, anyway.
By the way, Shawn Michaels wins the Royal Rumble.
Right? Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. You saw that. Yeah. I have an issue with the showing we were saying we're big on showing our work. And like, that's one of the things I loved about Death Valley Driver and then all the people who went over to PWO and then would do these cool projects, is there was a lot of meticulous analysis. And so, for a lot of people, it's ridiculous and it's verbose and you're making stuff up. But I found all of it valuable if you understood the context of everything and knew where you were sitting within it. Whereas I feel like everybody's just like, I mean, baby with the bathwater doesn't even cover it, because I just feel like people just didn't even like notice a baby or a tub. They were just like, no, not. When I see like prominent gatekeepers who just say, oh, it was an amazing match. It was four and three-fourths, almost five. They just did so much stuff, and it just kept going. And I go, well, that's not a great match to me. That's a lot of matches I criticize now from PWG or New Japan. And I think we can all stress, we do like some of those matches.
Yeah.
It's just that, like, I don't think it's showing your work when your review is, it was, they did so much amazing stuff and they innovated. It's just such a, it's funny to me because it feels tone deaf, because those are the types of people that would criticize Vince Russo, and rightfully so, about stories within wrestling. And yet they're kind of doing the same thing within matches. It's like, well, I mean, didn't Chris Harrington do that chart once where he took Meltzer star ratings and he found out that, like, if it went above 22 minutes, between 22 and 30, like, star ratings went up exponentially, especially. And if you read the reviews, it's like, oh, so much stuff happened.
Yeah. Yeah. I've even seen reviews where it seems like the reviewer is negative on the match by, like, the words. Like, they don't see, like, they're saying negatives here, negatives there, and they're not really that positive. And at the end, it's like 4.5 stars. And right. Like, you just complain for a whole paragraph.
That's JR's point. Everything starts at 3 is the new 0.
Yeah. People have to say negative things because that's how they – at this point, you have to justify giving matches not 5, right? Instead of – when I was coming up, but in my mind, you have to justify giving matches anything. I'll say this, you know, and I guess this is sort of where I diverge. To me, the best wrestling match ever has a grand total of like 2 punches throughout the entire thing, right? I mean, the Sangre Chicana MS Uno match in 83 is the best match I've ever seen. I don't think that, you know, if something topped it, it would be revelatory for me. But like that match, you know, has like 4 moves, you know, 4 moves in a 15-20 minute match, and it's perfect, right? That's all you need. I guess sometimes less is more, you know.
In same year for me, Dundee versus Lawler from the Mid-South Coliseum. I think it was the first or the second of their Loser Leave Town matches.
Yeah.
Same thing for me. I was like, and I wasn't in the camp of like Lawler's amazing. He throws this great punch. But I mean, the funny thing is, you brought up Death Valley Driver, and I remember reading them in like 2000, 2001. And I would just get so mad at Phil Schneider. I was like, why is he such a jerk? Because he couldn't just say, like, this is good, this isn't bad. He'd be like, you're dumb if you like this. And if you – it felt very, like, almost like hipster, where it would be like, well, you think that's cool, name mainstream-ish thing. Well, this thing you haven't heard of yet, which I didn't know at the time, you know, is so much better and everything. And I would tell privately, I'd be like, you know what? He's smart, but I don't get why he expressed himself that way. And Will would say, you know what? He does do all those things, but he's not a bad dude. And more importantly, as far as this thing goes, he's turned me on to more good wrestling. And what's funny is I have a person like that too, which is Dylan Hales. And I've told him privately, like, even when I want to kill you or I think you're just making up counter arguments just for sport, I have never met a person who has turned me on to more cool things than that guy. And my closing point about this is that I used to just get so mad at Phil, and I felt like we were on opposite sides. At that point, like, if you're doing a political analogy, we were just so right and left in some way, and I'm not going to pin that on. I think we're both pretty politically aligned, actually. But we were, like, both in the center in some weird way now. We're, like, we've come together. We might be far – we're probably far on a certain side. But it's weird that the people that you used to argue with or used to, like, not like certain points, like, 10, 15 years ago – now you're all older guys in your 30s or 40s, and you're all like, hey, man, don't you miss this? Yeah. And I think that's kind of funny.
Right.
And I'll just throw out my favorite match because we're all throwing it out there.
Why not? Yeah.
Volano 3 Atlantis.
So good.
I think you need crying for a match to be great. Yeah. And that match has it at the end, so that's good. You need the audience to cry. Like, they need to care deeply.
That match is so unbelievable.
Yeah, like, it gets higher in my head, like, every year, I think. It just keeps going up and up.
To give Mr. Meltzer credit, let's leave it on this note.
Some things transcend personal differences. Dave Meltzer has given that match the coveted 5 stars. And I would bet that if that match happened today, it would get 6.25.
Here's a fun correlation, so I can be a little shit, and because you're right. But also, that Lucha match, which he heaped praise on, one is the only Lucha match that I know of that ever won his newsletter's match of the year.
Yeah.
So I don't know if there's a correlation there, but I'm just saying, I'm looking at your side eye. Match and Meltzer. But again, that's not his quote-unquote fault or good name. You know, if that was bestowed upon them, and fault is a horrible word for it, but like, again, it kind of goes back to that argument. Like, he didn't do that. And I have to defend him when people are like, oh, look at his Hall of Fame, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, well, he didn't personally just put out he didn't once a year go, like, here's the tablets that I'm handing down, and the tablets say Brock Lesnar's name.
Yeah. No, the assassins are in.
Yeah.
No, he had to put a lot of groundwork for people to vote the way he wanted.
Yeah.
He does influence the vote, and then, like many things, he does act, not indifferent, but what's the word? He acts like there's a dissonance there where he doesn't get, well, how he would have affected it when he has.
Yes.
But he is not the sole person doing it, so it is not his fault.
Yeah.
So Shawn Michaels won this match quite a long time ago. so I guess final thoughts on the match before we go here. Johnny, what did you think?
I liked that Dick Murdoch was in it. I completely forgot that he was. I actually, Doug, there was a good intensity there because I never noticed the ring being too full of guys the way it is in the last, like, half decade, to where guys just, like, grab each other and you just see them talking to each other and kind of, like, not even full punching. They're just kind of like, don't get hurt. And I get it. Like, you know, it's rough. But I like that it was wide open. It actually does have – the things that I like are still the things that I do like, which is, like, people bump hard. They make something feel important. There's not – 30. If you do an awesome kick, you don't have to keep doing it. Just do it once and have the guy just bump like he just got shot with a shotgun and then play to the crowd a little bit. This isn't exactly that type of match, but like these are the things that I go like, oh yeah, that even though I'm not in love with this era, like there's some solid stuff to it.
I like this Royal Rumble. I think there's a few things that are memorable to me. One, Mabel is awesome in it. Mabel's pretty. I think it's time for another look at Viscera / Mabel /
Big Daddy V had a good run.
Yeah, you know I love the John Cena Big Daddy V match. That's out there. It's like a 5 or 8 minute TV match, and it's awesome. The other thing that I'll say about this match, Stephen will never let me on a podcast again after I say this, but you know, I'm not the biggest Bret Hart fan in the world. Don't have the personal connection, but I think that it is a rare performer that Bret isn't in this match and he's like the most memorable part, just coming out and wrecking people on the entrance ramp, you know?
Yeah.
So good for Bret.
Yeah. I'll lose your contact. but there's one point where Johnny was talking quite a lot, and I just started laughing. Timothy Well got thrown into the turnbuckle upside down. He was supposed to obviously go over the top, but just, like, crashed into the mat.
Oh, yeah, it's like a failed flare flip type thing. Yeah,
it's so vicious looking, and, like, the guy just picks him up and throws him out after, but like clearly he was supposed to go. He was trying to do this memorable bump to get over, but it failed and it just looked amazing. So
he did do a memorable bump. That's for sure.
He did for sure. Well, thanks everyone for joining us, and we'll be back again in a couple of weeks.
Hey.
Everybody, Todd Pettengill with your final Royal Rumble report here on WWF Superstars, because this is it. The 1995 WWF Royal Rumble Spectacular happens this Sunday night, January 22nd at 7 Eastern, 4 Pacific, as we come to you totally live from the sold-out Sun Dome in Tampa, Florida, exclusively on pay-per-view. So you gotta hurry and call your local cable company to place your order. Otherwise, I'm afraid you may run out of time. which is one thing you don't want to run out of. Paper towels, yeah, milk sometimes, but you run out of time, you'll miss the greatest night of the WWF ever, in my opinion. Call your local cable company and tell them you want the WWF Royal Rumble Spectacular. After you do that, come this Sunday night, you'll see Pamela Anderson from the hit TV show Baywatch. Uh-huh. She's going to be the host for the entire night. It's the world's largest beach party. And I mean, it just doesn't get any cooler than that. Unless you'd be interested in seeing, 30 of the greatest WWF superstars go at it in the ring. That's what could happen this Sunday night in the actual Royal Rumble match itself. Here's the deal. We're talking 30 guys in 30 minutes. We hold a drawing to determine the order of appearance for the superstars. Now, this year, the drawing will take place this coming Sunday during the Action Zone, and it's going to be totally live. Superstars get their numbers. That's the order they'll appear. Now, the match begins with two guys in the ring. Then, every 60 seconds that goes by, another WWF superstar comes down the aisle to join the action. The only way you can be eliminated is by being thrown over the top rope and having your feet touch the floor. The winner of this very prestigious match earns an automatic shot at the title at WrestleMania 11 and will be escorted down the aisle by Pamela Anderson. This is, bar none, the fastest 30 minutes on TV. Here's the final lineup on Who's In It to Win It this year. Made in the USA, Lex Luger. King Kong Bundy. Doink the Clown. Bob Backlund. Quang. Adam Bomb. Luke and Butch of the Bushwhackers. Duke the Dumpster Drosy. Dick Murdoch. Henry Godwin. Aldo Montoya, the Portuguese Man of War. British Bulldog, Davey Boy Smith. Mo and Mabel. The Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels. Kona Crush. Mantar. Owen Hart. Timothy Well. And Stephen Dunn. Plus Jacob and Eli Ballou, who I'm told are absolutely huge. We have not seen them yet. We will see them at the Royal Rumble itself. Plus, these new entries, the Head Shrinkers, Fatu and Sione, who were eliminated from the tag team tournament last weekend, along with the Heavenly Bodies, the Gigolo, Jimmy Del Rey, and Dr. Tom Pritchard. Now then, you may have noticed that missing from this awesome list were the 1-2-3 Kid and Bob Sparkplug Holly. Well, just this week, they withdrew from the Royal Rumble match so that they may concentrate solely on their match with Bam Bam Bigelow and Tatanka in the tag team finals. Therefore, the Smoking Guns have now stepped in. Apparently, Bart's injuries have healed, so there you have them. The 30 prestigious WWF superstars involved in this year's Royal Rumble.